Now, for the thousands in attendance and the millions around the world, ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Now turn to the African Hip Hop Blog Podcast.
I is play guy boss African Hip Hop Blog handy.
Yes, y'all. Welcome back to the African Hip Hop Blog Podcast. It's your boy Phil Chard, beaming to you live from an undisclosed location out in the heart of the motherland that is known as Africa. Well, actually, this week I can reveal my location. I'm currently in Johannesburg as we prep up for the 2016 MTV African Music Awards that'll be going on tomorrow night. We've been gathering a ton of content, and we cannot wait to give it to you guys. And over this weekend, we'll be gathering a lot more, getting guys insightful news. So if you are tuning in before the Mamas, even after the Mamas, make sure you check in at africanhhb.com or our Twitter page at africanhhb on Twitter. We're going to have a host of updates from the weekend itself. But first things first, a couple weeks ago, I sat down with a young, very talented rapper named Solo. If you guys have been checking the website, you might have seen the article and interview plus album review I did on his second album, Dreams Be Plenty. So please, if you have not, head on over to africanhhb.com and give that a read. But that article was based off a very long, very informative interview I had with him. Almost an hour long, actually. So first things first, let's kick off this week's episode with that interview that I had with Solo. During it, we discuss a host of topics, from leaving Universal to being an independent artist, how he's built his independent empire, how he approaches the music game, how he approaches the radio game, and the thought behind being a quote-unquote lyrical rapper in South Africa when everyone seems to be focusing on commercial rap. It was a great conversation, and he really opened up my mind to a new avenue and how he's able to sustain his career despite the fact that he doesn't have quote-unquote mainstream appeal. So this was a great conversation. Enjoy that. And straight after that, we'll then get into some Mama interviews.
How is the play guy boss African hip-hop blog handy?
It's your boy Phil from the African hip-hop blog, and I've got myself a special guest here on the podcast, a lyricist, a true artiste, if you say. Some might say he goes against the popular grain with his music. A man with a message, none other than Mr. Langa. None other, Solo. How you doing, sir?
I'm all right, Mr. Langa Jr.
Oh.
There are two seniors ahead of me, man. Let's make that clear.
Okay.
What's good, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Chilling.
Seems like every time we meet, it's always a little frantic. It's always a little hectic.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just two very busy dudes.
Yeah.
That's all that is, man. We'd rather have those problems than not. Trust me, we'd rather be busy than not.
Definitely, man. Yeah. So it's been a busy few weeks for you, man.
Yeah, really has.
It was the album, finishing it up, the listening session, then the launch party, then the project itself. I've been trying to digest it since it dropped, since you guys sent me a copy, man. It's been impressive. So before we even get to that, let's get to the presentation of the album, because the way you presented this album to the public, the way I saw it is, I was even thinking about it earlier today, it almost feels like you're in the wrong generation. If you get what I'm saying.
I do. That's just an interesting way of looking at it.
But the way I look at it, like, growing up, the reason why I got into blogging or writing about hip-hop is, when we were kids, we used to have cousins that used to fly to America or go overseas, and they'd come back with copies of Double XL or The Source. Yeah. And read all these articles. And in those articles, they detail DMX had an album, so Def Jam had a listening party. We all went to the listening party. DMX explained the project. And then a week later, there was the launch party.
Yeah.
We had a great time. DMX performed the tracks. He had a few guests. There was the who's who of hip hop was at the event.
Yep.
And the writer would like just paint the story.
Yeah.
And that was our that was our folklore. Like those were our comics, and we'd read that stuff like, wow,
that's
dope. And then we get into the industry, we start blogging. And then when dudes drop albums, they just send you a flash stick or they send you a CD.
Yep.
If they do an event, it's at Kong.
yeah.
And it's not really a launch event. They say it's a launch event, but you're not really launching your project. Like, the DJ's playing music from a thousand different artists.
It's a party, like you said, right?
Yeah. You get on stage, maybe do 30-minute sets.
Yeah.
And then you don't really get an appreciation of the project.
Sure.
Like, I felt, especially with this project and with your earlier work, basically what you and Better Gang have been doing since you formed.
Yeah.
It's a throwback to that, where artists value their work and they're saying, yo, I'm willing to put time. Like, I remember I saw you at Cool Out once.
Yep.
Your own stand.
Yeah.
Even books. Selling your CDs from the stand.
Yeah, man.
Independent operation. And I appreciate that. That's not, a lot of artists don't do that. And a lot of artists are like, me, sell my CD? Nah, fam. Go to the store, go to music. I'm not gonna man that operation.
You know, the issue with something like that is, if you wait for the climate to be just perfect for you to be able to just like be able to be shelved at Musica's and have like your music kind of be, you know, topping charts on radio, all before you say you're gonna drop an album, the odds are against you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The truth of it is that I don't think I was born into the wrong generation per se. I think I grew up in a specific generation. So you need to remember, and this holds true for every artist who had the dream from when they were a beginning. The truth is, you had an idea of what it looked like from the jump. Mm-hmm. You always kind of, as you grew up, you knew in your mind, you already started to envision what it would look like when you get there. So all you're seeing is just a reflection of that. I never let go of that. You know, hence tracks like Poster Child, where I'm just like, yo, man, growing up, I could have sworn you guys would be putting posters of me on your walls.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all you're seeing. I think, you know, you need to remember. So I'm 28 now, right? So essentially, you know, my interest as a kid in terms of hip hop was that 95, 96 era. Mm-hmm. That's my introduction. And then I stayed through the whole evolution, right? I started studying it and learning it through that evolution. There are things that I do that are very much in the sphere of what happens today, like how we choose to put things out in terms of Better Gang. You know, it lives in this online space. But in turn, like I choose my favorite moments of different eras, kind of painted by what I always imagined it to be, and that's what I fight for every day, you know. So when I'm told that, nah, dude, you know, today the game has changed, it's all about, you know, like the right singles, man, it's a singles game today. What if I shine most when I put together a whole project? Then what? Then I play the singles game, I'll lose. You know what I mean? And not by virtue of my singles aren't as dope. Singles are as dope as the climate. Don't, like, we can't overlook that, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a trap climate currently, then the dopest single will most likely be a trap joint. Mm-hmm. It's based on the climate and what the majority of artists are doing. Mm-hmm. Now, to play myself short and be like, yo, I have this track called Overtime. It's not necessarily what's going on now, but I might as well just shelve it and do what everybody else is doing. It's shortchanging myself, because again, overtime is a position in the album. It's essentially just track 4 in the album. It's a standalone story that tells a bigger picture. Now my fight becomes, I have to make sure that I get an album out, because that's the only way I know how to tell a holistic story. Mm-hmm. That means I'm not going against the grain because I think that's a cool thing to do. I go against the grain because the current climate doesn't allow for this. So I have to fight for it, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't think it's necessarily like a difference in era thing. I think I'm just not going to sit down and be like, I guess we wait until you know, we'll put single after single out and another single until they're like, that's the one. Then we start to gear up for an album. No, I won't. My headspace probably won't be in the Dreams Be Plenty headspace anymore. So I'm already giving you dated music, whether you feel like it's dated or not. I have to fight for this period because this is the period that I told my story in. How many artists you know right now who have albums out and don't have at least like one single that like really jumped? Outside of me, I can't really count one. Looking at September alone, you know, September saw last week the drop of a Natty. This week is me. Next week is Nasty C. I can tell you for free, those dudes do pretty comfortably on radio. But here I am in between, sandwiched. And I'm allowed to put out an album. And the only reason I'm allowed to is because I fought for it. That's the only reason. The climate isn't necessarily conditioned for what I do right now. And I've always said this. I've always said that I unfortunately have the task of having to teach. Where eventually they're like, okay, this is what's currently happening. Then there's that guy. We let him do what he wants to do. He's just the exception and it's fine. And that's what I'm fighting for. A point where like you guys don't bother. People don't bother me with their rules. Like, come on, dog. You know you're supposed to miss me. I'm not supposed to do nothing. You know, unless you're a part of the team and you know what the rollout is, you can't tell me that this is how we're supposed to do it. And here we are. Sophomore album dropped with or without what I'm supposed to have. Yeah.
Okay. I think you touched on a lot of points there.
I do that.
The first one was, I think, let me clarify. I never said your music is dated.
No.
I said that the presentation.
The presentation.
Dated isn't even the word because I still feel there's a place for it.
Yeah.
But
it's not conventional today.
It's, I think a lot of the problem that I have, and I sound like an old fart, an old grumpy, like back in my day, but you and I are the same age, which is weird. But what I had hoped for is when people value the music.
Yeah.
And when you invest so much time and effort into your music, you care about how it's presented to the public.
Absolutely.
And it makes no sense that if you value that body of work, why would you present it to, like I said, a bunch of people that didn't even pay to see you or hear your music in the club. They just came to turn up and have Snapchats.
Yeah, they were coming to the club whether or not you were on the flyer or
exactly.
not. Exactly.
Yeah. So why not put those people who actually give a damn? It might be 5 people. It might be 20 people.
Yeah.
But at least you're building that one-to-one connection.
Sure.
Because like what Ryan Leslie says. Ryan Leslie says, I don't need 1 million fans. I just need 1,000 fans.
1,000. Yeah. I'm all familiar with the concept of 1,000 fans, fam.
And that's what I'm trying to speak to artists about. Like, why do you guys always cop out? And you'll find the instances where artists will literally relinquish their IP.
Yep.
And like, no, it's fine. Give my shit away for free.
Yep.
On the basis that I might get 1,000 new fans. But of those 1,000 people that download your shit, how many are willing to put R$100 down to come see you perform?
Yeah. You see, what this isn't even a shot at you, but it's easy to say that, dog. It's easy to be like, why don't you just like stay true? Because you're hungry, you're nervous, you haven't gotten the acknowledgement for that long, you have responsibilities. This has to change now, you know? That's the reality of everything. Do you know how long it takes? You know how much money I've spent just on perception? And mind you, when I say perception, I'm not talking about selling a false impression of myself. I'm talking about things that, whether I like it or not, masses want to see. So I'll give you an example. I drop a very dope joint. I drop How Cool Is This Love with Zion. And we're just like, yo, man, it took us so long to put this thing together and to get it at this level. Here you go. Someone bumps it right now. 15 minutes later, they're just like, dog, all right, man, I need the video now. Like, a video's R$100,000. R$100,000. And mind you, I say, I know you can do it for cheaper, but I also know that there's a standard. And remember, I've tried and tested this. I know that shoot the wrong one, and you've just taken 2 steps back. because today there is a standard, right? Because we play in a game now where, you know, there's a fraction making like a gangload of money, and besides having that money, they also have the brand influence, which means they can pull on the favors. They don't even need to spend their own money, but they can make it all look right. Now, when I sit in a position and people are just like, man, you're quiet now, dog. Where the videos at? And I'm like, where the money at, dog? Where's the investment you put in for me to be able to do these things? Mm-hmm. You know? And that's what I mean. The well can run dry quickly. Like, dog, quickly.
Yeah.
But what people need to see from you, what their expectations are, don't slack a minute. You know? And that's the truth. So when we're looking at situations and we're just like, ah, that artist, cop out. That artist, that's why I appreciate that one. He's real. Man, it's literally such a internal conflict so often. And that holds true for every artist trying to get it. You know, I'm doing my best to try to get it at my terms. But even if I ask the question, how long do you guys think I can last without, like, now proper remuneration from all of this? Because since 2012, giving and giving and giving and giving, and not to toot my own horn, but if you can hear it in the quality, then understand it was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I've been at this, and right, and that's my battle and my fight, and I understand that. You know, no one said, Solo, go out and do this. This is what I'm fighting for. This is what I stand for. I get it. But at some point, you have to be either really clever with your decisions, or you need to adjust something.
Mm-hmm.
Comes very unfortunate when you have to adjust the music.
Yeah.
Right? And your strategy behind the music. But again, what are you expecting artists to do? You know, because it's only so much dab I can live on. Remember that dab just like fuels the fight. Everything else is money, and it's the realest money. I think it was about 3 weeks ago, especially after kind of tallying what, you know, the launch would cost, and I was sitting there with figures that I've spent since Dreams of Plenty, sitting there thinking, how do I get that much money to do that, to do all of that all together? Because if you add it up, it can shock you, you know. And again, for many artists, and this isn't a unique story, the truth is we're constantly having to pay back. So my point is, sometimes the rollout and what you see isn't necessarily what the dude was hoping for versus what the conditions and circumstances allowed at the time. Because you wanted to at least shine. You wanted to at least look correct. And often, man, if it means, look, if we're in the club, at least there's a setting of some sort, you know. My point is, there are many decisions. And look, I'm not even trying to make it seem like everybody has this complete conscious. I'm just saying it's not everybody who is really just copping out for the sake of copping out, you know. And also, you know, I've spoken to my peers. We share the same sentiment quite a bit when it comes to how real this all is, you know. So I don't blame them. Again, there's a different vigor for everybody. There's a different level of fight in everybody. I have learned that I've got the legs for this. Like, I can run this marathon. That's, I think, between end of 2014 till now, and having been able to say, okay, fine, the 16th arrived and I dropped my album, I can definitely tell you I've got legs for this. And I could probably do it again in silence with no acknowledgement.
Okay. Well, once again, touching several points. But
yo, man, try stop me if you need to, man. It's fine.
No. I think it's best, like, if you get all your thoughts out there. But with that being said, like, I was at the launch, man. I saw it. Yeah. I mean, that was not a cheap event by any means.
Yeah, man.
And not to get into your pockets, but that's something that I often think about.
Yeah.
Especially with rappers like yourself who are lyrical, who really take time and create your own lane.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is a lot of the consumers, they don't always appreciate that immediately.
Yeah.
So there's always that balance that artists have to do. Like, okay, who am I fighting for? Am I fighting for the dedicated few or the passive many? You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And that being said, those that go for the mass market appeal, they're the ones that will be getting bookings week in, week out.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because they're getting played on radio, they're getting played in the club, etc.
Yeah.
What's that personal conflict like for you, when, especially with this album?
Yeah.
When you're going in, were you like, do I stay true to myself or do I tweak it a little in the hopes of finding a balance?
So for me, what I found was that, you know, so the conversations, I mean, there's a number of times where we had the conversation of, okay, is there something that needs to be adjusted here? Was something done wrong? And not because I felt like Dreams of Plenty was then a failure, by no means. I mean, how can I call it that if I have an award now, right? Mm. Very tough to then call it a failed project just by virtue of that alone. Mm. Outside of everything else that kind of built for me, just in terms of you know, brand endorsements and all these different affiliations brand wise that kind of then funded quite a bit of my plans, you know. The thing about it is, and this is why I mentioned having the legs for it, those conversations have probably last about 30 minutes, maybe an hour, if we're really diving into them. Just in terms of, yo, like, if we're really trying to A&R it and be like, okay, maybe we should kind of step out of ourselves to look at this thing holistically to figure out if, you know, we're not too emotionally attached, and if we don't have to just adjust things for the sake of, you know, getting the broader picture out. Then eventually we start making the music and it sounds the way it sounds. And then we're just like, okay, clearly I personally can't fight what I sound like. We can try and try and try. I'll always, and that's the thing with like being the rapper and having the words and the delivery. I end up kind of curving what the skeleton of the music sounds like. And then everything else that has to be worked around the music lands it at a specific place. They were like, damn it, man, we were trying to make a trap song. Now we have this like in like this heavily like organ fused and like choir singers. We're just like, we're so bad at making that music, dude. Mm-hmm. We're so good at what we do though.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's the part that you can't buy. It's the fulfillment at the end of it all, right?
Mm-hmm.
I made Dreams Be Plenty, bumped that thing like after we got the master back, and I remember thinking, numbers on the board or not, I don't know if anyone tops this. And you see what I mean? But obviously that's the rapper in me, that's the competitive dude in me. But at the same time, when I listen back and feel like a fan, like, you know, that it's tough to then go, something's wrong here. After feeling that feeling, it's a little tough for someone to convince me that we did something wrong. And, you know, so now when it comes to this balance, I think making the music and having it sound the way it sounds, and then going out there and then just fighting for it, is where the balance will probably come in. I don't think it stems from a place of necessarily looking at what everybody is doing and then borrowing here and there to kind of balance it out. Because what if that balancing out is what limits me from breaking international borders?
Mm-hmm.
You know, then what was the advantage of that? You know, what the opportunity cost? What do I lose, or what do I potentially lose from trying to get these little things that I feel like will kind of balance me out? So let's say now, based on my adjustment, once a month, I'm on the Kong lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Have I won? is that the whole game? Is that by virtue of that, is that me winning? Because, man, winning it definitely doesn't look the same for all of us. I can easily tell you that, dog, I could do back-to-back club gigs. There was a point last year where we did quite a few back-to-back. Then we get back to studio and be like, what was that right now? What were we doing right now? Like, you know, like there'd be a couple people who were really vibing with it, and then their dudes hitting on drunk girls. That's the setting. And I'm out here like rapping, right? And mind you, because we, you know, we use the drum machines, we can make that thing thump, you know, we can make it like thump ridiculously in the club. I can make sure that when you follow me as an act, your music sounds muffled just because of how hard we set that 808 just for live, right? So I could do like an insanely live set of overtime into poster child and then move, because also you can't do a 30-minute set in the club. You're killing people's vibes.
Yeah.
So what's that setting for an artist like me? You know what I mean? These are the questions I constantly have to ask. And yeah, that's why I'm like, I don't know if it's the right balance where it subtly looks like someone else. Also, I think what always haunts me is the idea of me laying this foundation, compromising, and then someone else just kind of taking two steps on the foundation that I laid and soaring. Because that's very possible, right? Where I don't know how close I really am, and then I kind of let it go. And then someone who was inspired by what I did comes out now and capitalizes. And then they're gone. And then I try to come back, and everybody who really was riding with me is just like, now we're good. We've got this guy now. So now you can stay in that middle ground. Remember, you got your balance and everything. All the best with that, right? So then I sit in a place where, like, for everybody on this side who is really good at it, because this is what this is their purpose. They sit at number 1, 2, 3, 4. So I'm like number 7 over here, and maybe like number 12 on this side. I guess that's a balance, because I'm somewhere properly in the middle. What does that, you know, what kind of fulfillment is that? Like I said, man, these aren't, for the most part, these aren't even decisions. It's just what comes out when I'm in the booth, when I'm in the studio. So then I have the task of, okay, buddy, look, this is what you produced. Go fight for it now. Go, like, do your best to get it to as many people as possible. Which is why I left the whole situation of really having to, like, really go beg musicers, yo, please, man, shelf this thing. Because it's easy. They go, okay, cool. Just give us, like, your stat sheet from radio. And I'm like, it's funny. Like, the thing is, I'm not really playing the radio game. Then they're like, well, we're not playing the buying of your product game. So then what happens? Because you don't have that, you stop? No. Figure something out. Find it. Create another platform if it doesn't exist. Do something. You know? And again, that's the fight. But again, like, it's fine. Like, me and my team have the legs for it. I don't need people to be nervous for us. You know what I mean? Because we're actually fine, man. Like, we realize that this is what it looks like for us, and we have ideas of how we make sense of it. So we're just in the process, and that's cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I noticed that you're no longer on Universal. Can you give us, like, any reasoning why you decided to go the independent route?
So with the debut album, all I did was I sat down and I listened, right? I just paid attention. I did my best to learn how things operated. I had all these ideas in my head, but I was like, no, this is the learning part of everything. Towards the end of we dropped Dreams of Plenty in April 2014. Towards the end of the year, around November, I had a lot of unanswered questions, like, what are we going to do to create all this awareness? And they were like, no, we just need the right single. I was like, well, the album is done, so which one from here is the single. Then they'll be like, well, let's try this one. And then they'd send it to radio. And then they'd be silent. And then I'd be like, so what's going on? And they'd be like, ah, we tried. So, you know, when it starts to feel like, listen, and this is no shade to them, I think a lot of artists are comfortable with that answer. Maybe not happy, but they're comfortable where they're just like, I guess that's life. Now sitting there going, well, no, maybe let's discuss different things then if this isn't working. And there just wasn't that kind of mentality. Things might be different now. I mean, I know that Universal, a lot of people have kind of changed and moved around. But, you know, I don't think they understand or kind of view hip hop to be what it actually is. Entrepreneurship, right? So really, you're a brand selling itself, and that can't be passive. You can't just be like, oh, new album out, here you go, and then sit back, right? You have to go into, you have to be as creative as possible in terms of how you get music out, and that mentality just didn't exist. So yeah, I think I spent the rest of that year kind of gathering all the confidence to do it myself. But even by that time, I'd shadowed enough people, I'd asked enough questions to be like, okay, I get it. Like, I'm that dude in the game, man. I will knock on Slicker's door and be like, yo, so I don't want to do things like this. What do you think of this? And for the most part, even the answers from like, oh, Jesus, don't do it, dog. Don't do it. You're taking too big a risk. And I'd be like, yeah, cool, but this isn't helping either. This whole situation isn't like, it's not built for me. This climate that's been set because I wasn't around to also lay my own foundation whilst other dudes were doing it doesn't necessarily work for me. And you know, and I'd speak to not just artists, but like, you know, people from different labels. Dude, I've sat down with the most of them, right? To a point where that's when things started to really develop, right? I don't know if there's another independent platform like Better Gang that's Capasso affiliated, which means anything that I sell digitally, should I have different artists from different labels, mechanical royalties are already covered for them. Put that in place, you know. Everything from Risa affiliations, everything is in place the way that it should be, and that's because I ask the right questions. And also there's a projection of what it should actually look like later, or at least in my mind, right? And none of that works under the label. You know, like, I mean surprisingly so with this album, digital distribution is being handled by Electromode. Physical is being handled by a different company altogether, Red Revolution. I didn't keep it in one space. Because what if you're bad at both? Then I lose, you know? Also, I set specific conditions, even with Electromode. I was like, I'll give you digital, provided you don't tell me, well, you can't then put your music on different platforms. I have my own platform, so I'm definitely going to go that route if you guys choose to say no. It's fine, because you can also upload stuff by yourself on iTunes. It's very possible. So, you know, conditions like, yeah, I'll give exclusivity to iTunes for a period, and then it'll also live on the Better Gang site. You guys have no say here. You touch nothing here. Anything under the Better Gang banner belongs to Better Gang. And they said yes. Because as soon as you start to figure out where the worth is, you know, where labels can make you really feel like, dog, you need them or else. Then when you understand some things and you just walk in and you go, no, don't lie. Then they go, oh, well, okay, I guess we can discuss something, you know. But like, shout out to Chris, man, because it definitely wasn't one of those. It was never a ruse. I think that guy really believes in like the vision I have. And hence he was just like, no, it's fine. You know, we'll handle what we need to handle. Handle your own platform, grow it. You know, same thing with Red Revolution, where essentially you don't kind of get licensing for just one separate thing. Like, they'll be like, but so no digital, that doesn't even make sense. But I made it make sense. You know, we treat physical on the site the way you treat digital, right? So you can order a physical and it's just delivered to you. So they get a portion because they handle delivering as well. Something I don't need to do anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've been able to kind of create this, this motion between Better Gang to them to reaching the consumer, which now works as like a much easier segue than how I was doing it before. So my point is, like, we're really trying to be very smart. Even now during the foundation period, because if it works, dog, that's the key thing here. And even if it works for just 1,000 people, then the team is fine. Then we're good. You know, because also you can imagine what like the percentage is when you don't relinquish all of that, you know. So it's hoping that like we capitalize because of these brave decisions. But
yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like I was reading that there was a Rapport report, and they were like, in South Africa, if you're on a label, an artist, if you sell a CD for 100 rand, they're getting 8 rand. And I was like, wow. But I hadn't understood, because I know in America it's 12%.
Yep.
But still,
man. Yeah.
And 8% of your work.
Sure. And right, better than nothing, right? That's always the thinking, dude. That is always the thinking, where they're just like, hey, man, rather. I'm like, you can't sell me on that, dude. I'm sorry. It's just, it is what it is. But also, it's like I said, it goes deep. Like, so often you realize how much the stuff goes deeper than music, right? And again, no shade to anybody, but it speaks to a lot of things. It speaks to how you see yourself. It speaks to how you value what you did. I spent a year, close to 2 years, putting this thing together. You want to give me 8 rand out of 100? What did you do again? Because I remember funding this whole thing. You know, so it's all those little things, man. And that's why I'm like, it's actually fine, because I'm also now, I've conditioned myself for what might seem like a tall order, or like a steep mountain or steep climb. It's almost nothing to me now. It's like, daily, we can do this. It's fine. And I also know that the rewards, and that's the beauty of this whole situation, where if, whether or not you're looking at what the sound is, there have been enough examples in the past 5 years to show you that if you do it your way and it works, you're out of here. Casper, for one, you know, that for me is one of my favorite artists to look at, just in terms of moves. Him and his team, I really, really, really applaud them, man, because many people say, yo, when we get to this level, we're going to do it right. I don't know another artist who has done it completely right for me outside of Casper.
Definitely.
And that's my point, where like it's easy to say it, man. It's another thing to be about it. Mm-hmm. But I've seen him. I saw him do it his way. Now, if I stop doing it my way, that's on me. Because I know that the possibility exists now. I can't unsee what he did. Mm-hmm. You know? So we'll just continue to fight for ours and hopefully land same place or greater heights.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that's also where the caveat is that I wanted to find out about, is because, for example, Casper took off based off two big, okay, radio, there's that, he's got that love-hate relationship with radio, but they were big in the streets, they were big in the club.
Yep.
And that was the catapult that helped him. So you've said that you're not focusing on singles, you're focusing on a body of work. And how would I put this? I appreciate that, and I can see where you're coming from. My only question is, are the kids listening to albums these days?
I also like find it funny how we all think that like kids are the people with buying power. You know what I mean? I remember being a kid. I didn't have the money for these albums, right? The people who vibe with my stuff are the people with disposable income.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And my point is, mind you, it's not, You see, you saying something like that isn't necessarily wrong, but you do understand that, like, it's just like, it's almost ordinary conversation in music and the music business, where people tell you that, dog, listen, the kid's got a vibe with you. And I always go, how much money do you have in your wallet? About $300. Like, kids don't have $300 just chilling in their wallets, dude. Right? The only thing is that they're manipulative. They go, come on, dad, listen, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's the only difference. But my whole point is, if I'm selling to you, who's 28, you probably have the money to be like, listen, let me break you off 100, actually.
Yeah.
So then what's the concern? Because unless we're all saying, yo, by the time you reach 30, you stop listening to music, that's fucking stupid. That's not a real thing for anything. That's not true at all. It's about tapping into the right people. I know what the kids vibe to. I know that there are exceptions to the rule. I also know that there's this difference in terms of, okay, that's the United States. They're a bit of an exception. Then there's you. Because are we saying that the kids don't listen to Kendrick? Are we saying they don't listen to Cole? Let's not kid ourselves. I was at the Kendrick concert. These kids were singing word for word. He did mixtape stuff. They went word for word. Same thing happened at the Schoolboy Q concert. So there's a level of, like, there's a gray area every time, like, this is brought up, where they're like, nah, man, the kids don't like this. Play Good Kid, Mad City and see if they don't rap word for word. The same kids we're talking about. And that's why I'm like, some of these things, man, we hold on to them as if, like, they're Bible, as if it's, like, you know, the unchanging truth. I'm sorry, I don't think that's completely true, you know? Again, it's about the teaching.
Yeah, and I think I actually get your point. It's because hip-hop is so, quote-unquote, youth-based, a lot of us get kind of... Don't try and appeal to this market and forget about the rest.
Yeah.
What I was also trying to think of is, we've seen a new lane sort of develop where the more artistic, especially in South Africa, where the more artistically inclined rappers find more appreciation outside the country than they do inside the country. Absolutely. So I'm kind of like, have you tried to tap into that, or are you exploring those opportunities?
Definitely. I'm definitely exploring the opportunities, and the reason being, more than even me, for every time people have said, I shame, dog, I, maybe it might be too, like, worldly for here.
I hate that word.
Oh my god. Now imagine having to hear it, like, once a week for, like, 2 years, right? So, but my point is, at some point you have to look at the situation and be like, wait, are these people not just, are they not right? You know, is there not, like, a truth to what's being said right now? You would have noted that, like, with my features on the album, Spook Matambo pretty much, like, resides in Europe now.
Yeah.
Right?
He's the poster child for exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah. You then have, like, a Zion who, you know, Liquid Deep era, and even now, like, he just came back from Portugal. He's that dude. Lily Million, more around Africa, was always out of the borders. When KO was doing South by Southwest, Ello was there too. People just don't know. Then you start to see the pattern, and you start to see where my mentality is and where my head's at. I'm definitely trying to explore. And also, I mean, I you know, so none of this, no, you know, iTunes, for you as a South African artist, is Southern Africa only, you know. I got a tweet from a girl in Japan who bought the album, you know, who rather pre-ordered the album just yesterday. I got quite a number of people who are tweeting me today from around the world getting the album. So when you start to realize that, even, and also how, you know, even the Better Gang site is based, you can purchase that thing from anywhere. I can get you that physical copy anywhere in the world, technically. There are means today. So when you start, like, remembering that, like, for the most part, we're all our conscious selves on a digital platform, as unfortunate as that is, you realize that the borders haven't been there for a while now. We're now talking just the physical self now being there. You get what I'm saying? That's what's next. It's, yeah, because they're clearly vibing with it. Just get your body and your team's bodies there. That's the next move. And it's, and also when you start to like really reduce it to what it is, it's not a daunting thought. Also, it doesn't seem that unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
When you realize that it's, you know, you get the right person to hear it, then they're just like, come, no, don't stress, we're paying. And that's it. Then it begins.
Okay. All right. We've had a very philosophical, deep conversation.
I'm always this dude, man. I hate it.
These are the conversations I live for, man. Like, yeah. If you guys know me, this is exactly the type of conversations I want to have. But let's talk about the project, man.
Yeah, let's go. Let's get into the project.
Let's get into the project, because it's Fire Flames.
Okay.
Fire Flames.
Cool.
Is the two-word view.
Okay. All right.
One thing I definitely noticed from the jump is, in conjunction with the project and with the live performance. How long have you been performing with the live pads and the NPCs?
Since June of 2014.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's my bad, because I'm not always in SA, so when I fly in, all I see is like what's on the internet and what's not.
Sure.
But that really impressed me. Like the live performance, the live beats. Yeah. That's one thing that really annoys me. Like, if dudes in the studio and they release their version and it's got 808s, and then they do a live version with live drums, and it sounds totally different.
You feel removed from it,
and you're
right?
No, I want the 808s.
Yeah, yeah. That was essentially our thinking as well. Where like you always like the live element, but it's always this. Mm-hmm. Now you have to adjust yourself.
Yeah,
you know. But exactly that. That's where the thinking came from.
Okay, and throughout the project, those same drums.
Yep.
Like, I think you said you only worked two producers, was Junior and Books, right?
Yep.
So for the most part, I'm hearing that same unified sound.
Yep. There was a synergy.
Even like with Overtime, the way you redid it and you added the extra bridge and then the extra verse at the end with the add-on. Yeah. I can definitely to get to that. So what was the mentality behind that? Like, when you made this project and you switched up the sound and added these new drums and these new elements.
Yeah.
What was the end goal?
So again, listening to artistic self and listening to the growth. So what am I really vibing with right now? All those sounds that you're hearing is the stuff that I was really vibing to. You'll pick up that there's a lot of like West Coast influence.
Mm-hmm,
That kind of comes through. You hear it primarily in Overtime, like you know, where that's where we were really kind of playing around with it. Also, during that time, even with We Need a Title, you know, I was already kind of playing with that. Hence, like tracks like The Heist are like early 90s West Coast funk. Yeah, you know. Yeah. So again, it was more just kind of listening to the things that the sounds that I was kind of gravitating towards, and then being true to that. So none of it was, I can safely say that none of it was an adjustment of, nah, man, this is what the kids like right now. It's what I like right now, you know. And I think that was another thing where it got tricky, where we're just like, but what if people think, now you're doing this for the sake of, you know, appealing to a specific market. And eventually, like, you remember that, like, you don't care. Like, you remember very quickly that, like, I don't even want to have this conversation. Let's make the music, right? And, you know, I keep saying that, like, I didn't actually take a break after Dreams of Plenty. You know, we immediately started working towards, well, initially, Overtime was supposed to be, at the time, I was working towards the Deluxe.
Yeah.
That's what I was working towards. And then we kind of sat and listened to the two. I listened to Overtime in comparison to what we had done for Dreams of Plenty. And I was like, there's already a growth here. I may remember Dreams of Plenty was end of 2012 into 2013. It was released in 2014. It's obvious that there's going to be growth there. Well, if you like what I was doing, where I kept at it, so we're just like, then maybe now's the time to already tell the story of the middle ground. Also, I was coming from a couple successes. In fact, it was February where I think end of January when I put out Overtime, maybe somewhere along those lines. But also, I'd already gotten the Jeep campaign. You know, it only rolled out in May, but it was already confirmed.
It was out, because I remember actually the last interview I did with you.
Yeah,
you had just dropped Poster Child.
Poster Child, yeah.
So the Jeep campaign was out
already. That was May, out,
and then Overtime had dropped, and then that's when the Dreams A Plenty Deluxe Talk had been released, but it kind of died down. So I was asking, and then you told me, "Nah, this is going on the next project."
Exactly. So it was the reflection of, but wait, man, there's already. So Dreams Be Plenty was always going to talk about this middle ground where now there are a couple of successes, there's still some closed doors, and I was like, well, you're living it right now. Get to work on this project now. And so that's when we kind of evolved and we're like, okay, build from the sound. We like what the sound's like, but now we need, I desperately needed a story and a segue to kind of explain this without being, you see, I always run the risk of sounding very preachy. I run that risk because I'm not making things lighthearted for the sake of lighthearted. Come on, everybody, let's dance, let's all get down. That's not my current voice right now, right? So I think in came the concept of this airport, right? Where, okay, you don't even need to be a rapper or you don't need to be a hip hop enthusiast to understand what this means, right? And that's where it all started to develop. It all then started coming together. There was this linear path that the album was going to take, and it was just kind of how I plant things in the story and how it all kind of makes sense for this bigger picture. But that's why I said to you, it's for me, my strength is in the album. I can conceptualize and then work towards that concept. I'm really good at it. And I shine most. I articulate myself most in doing that. You know, it might take a long time, but eventually I always feel like, yeah, this is worth it, you know? And I think that's what it was, where we realized at a certain time that no, now is actually the time, you know, to tell the story. And the beauty of how I actually laid this out, and this is purely coincidence, but is that the more I delay with the project and the more I keep at it and keep living life, the more I keep getting things to draw from, because again, I'm living the middle ground. So every time something happens, I just have more to say. You know, it's almost like I just get to narrate everything that's going on, but I kind of have to plant it into this theme now, into this concept of the airport that already exists now.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, where do we go from here? There's so many questions.
Yeah. I feel bad for you, actually.
But I think what we can do is ask, what are your goals for this album? What do you want it to achieve?
Yeah. I think especially now that it's done and I feel like the execution is what I was looking for. I think that's why I'm so proud of this thing, man. Because, so just to show you how this concept actually can easily complicate, right? We're in the space at the airport where I get to the airport and I'm already promised that I'm out of here, right? Mm. So I come in all cocky, right? Because I've got things that I can show you that people vibe with me. I know I'm definitely out of here. Flight's delayed. Okay, cool. You know, I'm still my feeling myself, self, right? Still know we're out of here. It might be a delay, but that's fine. And then much like everything in life, that silence humbles you. So the album goes from cockiness in terms of, like, if you listen to the first few tracks, it's a whole lot of bravado. It's a lot of, you know, hitting my chest. And then it goes into introspection when we get to, like, you know, Poster Child and First Drafts and, you know, Ball and Chain. Then eventually it hits sentiment. And that sentiment is, why are you doing this for real? And then you realize that it's all just about team and it's about family towards the end. It's the time. But yeah, that's pretty much it. So it goes, you know, it's Living in the Airport, but it takes that curve. Mm-hmm. All at the same time, we start this album with this love story between my mom and dad, who next year will have been together for 50 years. And you hear that at the beginning, then it's silenced, and then it comes back in the sentiment, because this is everything I do it for, right? Mm. So it was all these, like, concepts that had to kind of make sense all at the same time, and the parallels needed to kind of connect. And that's why I'm so happy, because, like, from where I stand and where the team stands, we actually did it, you know. And that for us is crazy.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now I'm kind of getting it. So, like, let me get this name right. The Fela Majlingozi was supposed to be playing your dad. Is that the character he was playing?
No. That's my actual dad.
Oh, what?
No, those are my parents, dude.
Oh, they're doing the voice acting.
So the. When you hear at the beginning of the album, when my dad is like, do you want to hear the long story or short story? Mm-hmm. He's talking about how my mom and dad met.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's my mom, like, correcting him, where she even says at a safer high, she says, then he tricked me.
Yeah.
That's like an excerpt from their anniversary party at the beginning of the year.
Okay.
No, this is literally them. That part isn't acting.
Those are other characters in the airport.
Yeah. So the characters in the airport are the actors.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally my mom and dad speaking throughout First Class Etiquette and A Safer High, which follow each other.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So when your mom hears a song like First Draft, you'll be like, who was she?
No, surprisingly, because I had a one-on-one listening session with my mom. And she was just like, you know, they used to do this. Music used to be like this in, like, the late 60s, where, like, people would kind of break down and, like, you'd hear someone say, you know, I get lonely sometimes and whatever. You hear them really speaking. So she kind of was, for her, it was reminiscent of that. You know, but also I'm an adult now, man. It's fine. Like, I probably wouldn't have done this No Shades of Grey time, but, like, now it's cool. It's not an issue now.
All right. I think the last question, because we've been ushered to finish up, is what's the significance of the song Jubilee
No Likamo? Jubilee is my late grandmother. Likamo is the nickname of my late cousin Langa, who was like my compadre. You know, he was a year older than me, but, like, we were the two. In the family, like, as kids, they dress us the same way. Like, that was my dude, and he passed away in a car accident that involved police.
Mm-hmm. So that explains that. F the police line, yeah.
Fuck the police, yeah. And that was, you know, because that's just real. I still feel the same way. I would have thought I would be over it by now, but I just have that relationship with police now. It's very unfortunate. It might be childish, but it scars. It's hard to just, like, get over that kind of stuff. And yeah, the song is more like you know, a conversation with the two of them, which is why I'm like, it's not a somber song. It's it's how I imagine I'd be speaking to them today as an adult, you know, in the position I'm in, doing what I'm trying to do and all of that. So and I think everybody can relate to that. We all know loss and love, and I mean, who wouldn't, like, do anything just to be able to have, like, a real conversation like that with someone who's passed that they really love. Yeah, I think that song just came out magical, man. Like, that's just me. It's arguably my favorite song on the album, which is why I made the decision to put it out before the album, because my thinking was, it almost doesn't get more hard in the sleeve than that. And remember, I'm trying to sell you to get the album. I'm not trying to sell you another single where you're just like, yeah, no, we'll vibe with this for 3 weeks and we're good, you know? And I think it was the perfect segue where people are like, okay, now I need to hear this album. Like, if this is anything to go by, I need to know what else is in it. Today's the 16th, so we'll see if that worked.
All right, man. Yeah. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Machi. It's always great, man. It's always dope.
When I get back, we're actually going to have to sit down and delve deeper into this stuff.
We can. We absolutely can.
I still owe you in books and interview. Don't worry, I haven't forgotten.
Let's do that as well, man.
Yeah, man. So I'll hit you up, man. Much appreciated. Thank you so much, man. Dope.
I used to play, guy, boss, African hip hop blog, Hande.
Right, and that was my interview with Solo. I had a great conversation with him. I really appreciate it. And if you have not had a chance to, please head over to AfricanHHB.com to read my article on his project and his career direction. He really did open up my eyes to a lot of the things that he's doing and the direction he's trying to take with his career. And I really respect his hustle, man. I really love his music. So all the best to him, man. If you have not heard Dreams Replay, be sure to cop it. It's worth the listen. If you really love good hip-hop, well-constructed albums, it's worth every penny. And as we discussed in the interview, you can even get it delivered right to your door so you don't have any excuses. And now onto our mama interviews. First up, we've got Casper Nyovest. A little backstory with the Casper Nyovest interview. We had been trying to get this interview locked in for quite some time. We had a delay, we had to push back, we had to change schedules, there were conflicts. Obviously, because Casper's very busy, not only with the mamas, but with also pushing his Full Up Orlando concert that's going to be happening next week. And once again, if you're in Johannesburg, if you're in South Africa, support the man. He's trying to do something incredible. I'm not even being paid to say this, but I feel it's important as hip-hop fans and for the culture that we help create these milestones and break through these glass ceilings. So if you can, get your ticket. That being said, Casper was a little delayed in this interview, and then we were in a massive rush. We had a great 30-minute conversation. I'll play the entirety of that interview next week. But while we're packing up after the interview, we're like, the audio wasn't recording. So we had to go to our backup audio, which is not the best. So I apologize for that, guys. There's nothing much I can do right now. But it's a lesson learned. Next time we know, measure twice, cut once. So first things first, we're going to load up Casper. I also spoke to Ricky Rick about a couple of things, and especially the importance of this nomination and what it means to him. And finally, Nasty C. Shout out to him, man. I appreciate all the stuff he's doing. So enjoy those three interviews.
African Hip Hop Blog.
Boy feel for that whenever block I get Rosebank in my formerly sexy chubby man. Yeah. You know, shirts wide open, bulky chest muscles, working out, training at the gym.
Yeah, bro.
Used to fill up the dome. What up? 2x platinum.
Yeah.
How you doing, sir?
Okay, how you doing?
Good, it's been a while, man.
Wow, yeah.
Definitely been a while, man. You've been up to a lot since the last time I spoke. Man, I'm about to fill up in Orlando now. What's the preparation like for that concert?
It's crazy, man. We've been doing a lot of things this year as well. Not only did I prepare the show, but also I worked on my health. Mm-hmm. And I had to lose weight because of what I'm trying to do. It's also very demanding, you know. So, yeah, it's been crazy. My body is
okay. And what can fans expect coming up?
Just a world-class show. Coming week, don't know anything. I don't want to give away much, but I want people to buy the ticket and come and check it out for themselves. It's, you know, there's so much history behind the show venues. A lot of people don't know, they should go research about Tep Tep Makatini and show that Miriam Makeba had. There's so much heritage about Orlando Stadium. So people should go and check it out. They really understand why the show venues.
And just as Full Up Orlando comes up, DVD, the Masters concert, was there a specific reason why you waited almost a year to drop the DVD?
Not really, man. We just wanted to do it until it was ready, and then by the time we wanted to release it, we got a deal that we were in talks with somebody about. The deal didn't really fall through, and it didn't happen. So we ended up just releasing it. So we're trying to air on TV so we can open it before the show. But I just want people to see it.
Okay. And are there any specials with the DVD?
It's definitely a lot more inside. Preparation, how I felt on the night, and things that people didn't get to see, like, you know, backstage, my family was there, my whole family, my mom and dad haven't been in the same building, all their kids, and a lot, so people get to see everyone. It was a very cool night, it was like, thinking about Luna's backstage. So anyways, that people get to see the show, man, it's very inspiring.
And I was like, as a fan, the last few releases, now that you're rapping again, you're serious and rapping, that's the best
one. It's dope. I mean, for me, like, rapping for me is something I've been doing for a very long time, so it gets boring, like, you know. Just rap. So sometimes I just want to make music and, you know, challenge myself and see how I can approach, you know, different songs instead of doing something that I'm very comfortable with doing. And but right now, you know, the game is different. People want to hear us rap and floss our skills and like basically do gymnastics on songs. So it's fun again for me to rap, and that's why I decided to rap a bit more. But you know, the harder I rap, the less the thing on music. Like the hardest record I dropped this year was Skelem, going all in, and that's only on the radio. So it's like I have to balance, you know, the music and still give people like the raw, like rap stuff, and still like make music that, you know, can play on radio. So it's difficult, but you know, at least I'm back to having fun again.
You've touched on that first one, that relationship you made with the radio. What do you think the main reason
has
to do with the radio,
not the radio? This is what happens, man. They help you get up once you're up there, they want to break you down. That means everybody out the first. Definitely won't be the last. You know, the people that they're hyping right now, in 2 or 3 years, you know, you see what they start doing to them when there's another new guy. So it's just about survival of the fittest. You know, how do you get around it? You know, I was just lucky enough to have a very strong fan base. They get my music from me and play the new songs. Like this weekend was performing in the room, and people were surprised at how people knew my new stuff that doesn't play on TV and radio. It's because, you know, the fans are out there getting the music for themselves and enjoying it in their homes. I'm just lucky.
That being said, I mean, you've got $1 million
to
close to $1 million. Do you think you need radio?
I mean, if everybody else is doing so well with just radio, and I'm doing so well without radio, no matter what can happen, if radio just play my stuff like you can play everybody else, I don't want any favors. I just want my music to play, bro, because you need as much exposure as you can get, you know what I mean? And just play my stuff, you know? Like, that's all. But I'm not even complaining anymore. I can complain about it. But right now, I'm just doing my thing. It doesn't stress me anymore. I'm having fun with my music, and it's working out. I'm just quiet. I'm just putting out music. It's so funny that all the joints that I jump on for collabs play so much on radio, and they're so successful for everybody else that I'm working with. But once I put out my own record, they don't play it as much as the features. So that should show you how much of an impact, you know, having Casper Invest on the song has. You know what I mean? So if they could just play my songs as much as they play my collabs, then I'll be cool. Every collab I did this year is a big song.
It's a weird shift. Especially based on that, as you just said, you're the first lookalike to sell. That alone is a big achievement. So you're still saying, even after all this, you're still struggling to get
it. Rapping about it on my video, man, I got this new project I'm working on. I don't really want to call it an album yet because I don't want to rush myself. I speak a lot about stuff like that. like the industry disregarding what consumers felt. I can't believe I'm still having to prove myself. You know, like nobody has the numbers that I have, but I'm the one who's fighting more than everybody just to, you know, be appreciated. It's weird, but I think at the end of the day, if you just stick it through, at the end of the war, people will realize, once they realize, you know, what I did for the game, you know, everything will come together.
That being said, there's also a debate right now about another young cat, Nestis.
Yeah.
He dropped his album for free, then he dropped it for
pay. Yeah.
And you've been doing a lot of free music, but you've also been successful with paid music. Do you feel in 2016 artists should focus more on paid releases or free releases?
I think everybody should do it. It comes natural to them. I think nobody has the formula. Nestis dropped his album for free because he couldn't clear a sample. And I think it was smart of him to drop it for free because it's so whack to create anticipation and then you can't give people the product when they're ready for it and drop it at a later stage. Like with me and the DVD, like, you know, I build it up, the hype was there, and then this deal happened and now it's like slow again and I have to build it up again. So I understand, you know, where he came from and he dropped it at the right time and it worked out. You know, people know the album now and people will buy the album just because they respect it and they love it so much, not only to hear it, but because they appreciate the work. So I think he was very smart with his decision, and I think everybody should just follow their heart.
So as a label, you've got artists. Gemini just dropped his video, Nadia just dropped the project. When you're working with them, do you tell them, okay, this stuff is too good to be free, let's make it
I don't control nobody, bro. Anybody who signs Family Tree will tell you that they don't even get to see me most of the time. They're always doing their own thing. I probably hear it when it's done, and I'll give my input. Sometimes they take it, sometimes they don't. But it's really up to them, because at the end of the day, they're their own artists, and they know their vision better than I do. So I just let everybody do their own thing. I try and help where I can, and that's about it.
And continentally, you've been working on a lot of artists.
Yeah.
I just heard you on Deep Lex's album dropped last week or something like that. How important do you think it is to work with acts outside of Australia?
It's very important, man, to collaborate just with anybody who has any kind of fan base in the world, not only Africa, just in the world. But if anybody has two fans, it's very important to collaborate with those people, because those two fans get to be exposed to your name and your music. That's how you grow. You know, that's why Beyonce collaborated with Lady Gaga. As much as they could have been two big stars, Lady Gaga's fan base and Beyonce's fan base is two different kinds of people. And once they did a record together, you know, they exposed each other to different kinds of markets. So it's very smart to collaborate.
You're just in Germany.
Yeah.
How was that trip?
It's very inspiring, man. Very great. Mind opening. You don't know who's listening to your music, thanks to the internet. You don't know how far it travels to see white people in Cologne rapping to talk shit with us. It's the weirdest thing ever. But it opened my mind. I mean, just inspired me and motivated me to just carry on being me and doing music the way I do, and approaching it with a very South African approach, and I guess that's what the world appreciates of me.
So I hinted at it earlier, you have to drop somebody, but now it's like really
I'm going hard at it now, bro. I've tried the gym thing a lot of times, but this time we really went hard, like from the diet to the program. Like, I go to the gym 3 times a day.
3 times a day?
Yeah, during the week. And what I eat also, I don't, like this month, October, I don't eat meat. I don't eat carbs. It's crazy, I don't drink alcohol. I don't drink juice. I just drink water and have a lot of vegetables. And only protein I have is fish.
Well, it seems to be working, but all the
best. It is working, and I feel great. You know, I don't get sick and stuff.
You think I should
Yeah, and you're so built, bro. Like, and I was just like you, so it's very easy for us to get in shape. So a lot of people take things to bulk up. You know, when you're a chubby kid, you have an advantage because it's easier to build, turn the fat into muscle than it is to just build muscle from bone.
So, like, how do you maintain that diet when you're on tour?
I'm mostly on the road weekends, so I cheat. Like on a Saturday, I can have whatever. But right now, I don't eat meat on cheat days. But usually, like Saturdays, I'll go all the way in, on the cake. But because of the way I eat during the week, on Sunday, everything comes up. The system is already, like, you know, to understand. So it is.
Mamas are coming up.
Yeah.
You know, maybe for Best Live Act and yeah. obviously for doing this song.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be nominated for Best Live Act for what you do?
It means a lot. That's one award. I treat about it as if this is the one award I really feel that I deserve throughout my career, Best Live Act, because I am the best African Live Act. If not of all time, I probably one of. You know, up there with the greats like Ina Sekela, Brenda Fassi, those are the people that I look up to. But in my generation, there's nobody before them.
It's not a
claim, man. Go and look. Go on YouTube and look at the award ceremony performances. You know, go and look at the live DVD. Like, and go and look at everybody else. It's the one thing that I really take seriously, and I always take it up a notch all the time. I'm that one guy every award ceremony shuts it down.
I know, because I've seen you perform. I even told you, like, the last time I met you, when you just broke out, Sheshe was taking off, and you performed at the Kendrick show.
Yeah.
And I told you then, like, I've never seen an iPad this good.
I really take pride. I really love performing. I don't have staff. I always put money in it as well. Like, with award ceremonies, they'll have a certain budget. They'll tell you, oh, we can't pay for dancers. I pay my own dancers. This is my own accommodation for the dancers. Get my own outfits. I always want to smash it. I don't want to just get on stage and walk around and get off. I always want to do something special.
Because I didn't remember last year, you did travel the world.
Yeah.
It was quite hectic.
Yeah, it was very hectic. But I was still chubby, so I think I could have probably executed it better if I was in shape, but right now, too much.
So what can we expect?
Crazy, like a crazy, energetic live performance. The Mamas, I hope that they give me the opportunity to do exactly what I want. And I also want to make a very big statement that night about some serious issues.
All I really want is, if you do Scallop, I'll be happy.
They don't allow us to do what we, you know, I'd love to perform like a Scallop. But they give you like 2.5 minutes and you have to share the stage with someone. Because there's so many acts traveling from all over the world. So you kind of have to collaborate with someone. There's so many rules. I think we might nail it.
I believe in
it. Yeah, thank you.
Besides that, you also nominated both our films in Columbus States.
Yeah.
So that's what you're going to do as well.
They said that it's good.
Right now, my mind is just around full of I really don't know what's going on. I don't know what I'm nominated for. I'm just concentrating on this big project. It's a huge project, bro. 40,000 tickets to be sold. It's not a joke. I really have to channel my energy and think of smart ways to market and engage with the people and stuff.
So as we stand, like, how close are you to your
goal? We're definitely doing better than last year. You know, last year we sold... Golden Circle was sold out 14 days before the actual event, and I think the event was sold out 5 days before. So right now, you know, we're looking at selling our Golden Circle probably end of the week, and then we'll see everything else. I don't know, but we're definitely doing better than last year. It's scary. It's a bigger venue. You know, we definitely have less naysayers, which doesn't help, because you need a lot of people to say you're crazy you know, for it to work out. Like last year was very easy because everybody thought I was crazy. This year everybody thinks progress is going to do it, which makes it a little bit harder. But, you know, we're going to the last stages of pushing marketing and adverts and stuff like that, which, you know, like the presence of the actual event is going to be 3 times more than what we've been.
So you're basically saying the success of Philip the Dome has made it harder?
Yes. Yes, the success of the Dome made it harder because it's not as exciting. People already see me as that guy that shows up stadiums. It's like Beyonce coming out and saying, I've been stadium in South Africa. It's like we already expected you to do that. You know, it's not like when Casper said, I'm gonna fill up there, it's like you're crazy. You know, so people expect me to fill it up already, which makes it a bit hard.
One thing I have was I remember last year to fill up the Dome, they had a lot of support hands.
Yeah.
This year it seems very quiet. Do you have any?
I'm doing a very long show, but I gave a lot of people the opportunity to open up for me. But there's a lot of people who I deserve it, like Nasty C, Pedro Junior, because people of supporting the show, like they had big years, I just had to pay them that respect. And on the other end, there's a lot of people who I would have loved to be part of the show and can't be part of the show. So we kind of just went with whoever was available that I wanted. And we also have a lot of surprise acts that we wouldn't want to announce before.
Another thing that I wanted to find out, like, in terms of the feed, are you done with videos of the feed?
You know, like, it was so depressing, like, to shoot so many videos for the album, not have the support from the TV stations. So it's kind of like, it's not lucrative to shoot more videos because, you know, nobody gets to see them. So we had to lay to rest. You know, like the songs like Defender that are very dear to me, that I would have loved to have visuals for and stuff like that. But like, right now, it's not really, you know, sensitive. Like, I might just put it on the next album just to carry on the story.
Because like my question goes back to what we discussed earlier. If you're selling out shows, if you've got all these, there's this massive fan base, and you're uploading the stuff to YouTube, and you're getting a million views on YouTube, do you still need MTV? Do you still need television?
You do. You don't need it to survive, but you need it really to expose yourself. I'm surviving. But I need to expose my stuff to more people so they can see it, so we grow. Because if you don't grow, you're stagnant. You're standing at the same place. And if you don't want to be there as an artist, you want to grow. So I don't need TV and radio to grow. I mean, I don't need TV and radio to survive. I can survive, but I need to grow. So as long as I'm not growing, it doesn't make sense.
Because I remember the last piece of it was almost a year ago, yeah, just speaking about your desire to shoot a video for the kids.
Yeah.
And you're really keeping it. So that's in itself now.
Yeah. But we're trying to shoot it, man, but so many politics. It's crazy. Working with the international acts is not as easy as it looks. You end up getting to a point where it's like you're making it. And I don't know, it's depressing, but we'll try and shoot it.
And then with the upcoming project, the plan release date, or you're going to focus on Orlando and get to it?
Orlando. But I am in the studio, man. I'm working on the project. And could you call it a classic?
Oh.
You know, I wouldn't want to put any pressure on myself, but I'm really working hard on this project. My voice is really, really, it's going to shake the industry. I'm trying to make the best album I could ever make.
The last question I have, 3 years,
yeah.
You've grown immensely.
Yeah.
You've gone from being an artist that was struggling to edges in the industry.
Yeah.
It's having two massively successful albums, now Living Dead, now got successful artists, all of these campaigns about to success, hopefully, pull up and land on the what has that been like? How do you handle that much success? That much money in such a short space of time?
I just work hard, man. I don't look at the money. I never look at the money. Well, I stopped looking at the money. I used to look at the money, and it drove me crazy. And then I stopped looking at the money, and I started concentrating on the job, what I do, and it seems to be working. You know, everything else will take care of itself. You know, the money will stress you when it's not there, and it will drive you crazy when it's there. So the best thing to do is just to concentrate on the work, so that you know, the money takes care of itself. You know, it will always be there. As long as you keep working, as long as you're doing a good job, you always have money. As long as you have value to give to people, people will always pay.
Okay. Well, man, I think that pretty much sums it up. Maybe for some
Yeah, right? Yeah, I need to do some more.
Shout out. Appreciate the time, man.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day, bro.
How is the play, guy, boss, African Hip Hop Blog, Handy?
Hi. It's your boy Phil from Hip Hop Blog. Out here with Nasty C.
What's going on?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man.
I'm good, man. I'm good. Yes. A lot going on right now, man.
Yep.
Bad Day just dropped. Uh-huh. What's the response been like, man?
It's been crazy, man. I mean, we dropped it for free, and it went straight to number one, and it passed like a couple of big albums.
Yeah.
Big mixtapes, and it went straight to number one. Got me verified on the site the same night. And then we took it down and still put up an iTunes link, and it's still number one in 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty crazy.
Before you dropped Bad Air, yeah, did you expect this type of response?
Not this type of response, no. In terms of numbers, I'm not really a guy that likes to look into numbers and how something is doing. I just put it up for the people that relate and for the people that want it.
Mm-hmm.
If they get it and they like it, I'm satisfied. I'll come with it. The reception is pretty crazy, man. I never really thought this would happen so quick.
Really?
Nah, not so quick. I know the album was anticipated or whatever, but I don't know. I'm just not a guy that works off of that.
Okay. It's so weird that you say that to me, because I think it was the first time where I realized that you were about to do something special was Mathtown Heights.
Yeah.
And you, on stage, kids were losing their minds. You got off stage and I've never seen anything like it. Do you remember like what it was like after you got off stage at Mathtown Heights?
That was crazy. That was my first time performing at that event. I think it was a surprise event even.
Back to the city. Yeah, exactly.
Surprise event. So me coming on stage, obviously people didn't expect it. That's why they were even crazy. And I think it's one of those shows that I actually go home and feel like I did something on stage. There's a crowd like that, especially a crowd that reacts to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Like the Back to the City crowd is a crowd that comes through for like MCs and lyricism or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A crowd that actually follows up on content.
Yeah.
So going there and them actually hearing what I'm saying on stage and then bugging out to what I'm saying, as opposed to them just like jumping up and down to the beat, really meant something for me. So that was crazy.
Okay. So like, now do you understand like the impact your music has on the culture?
Yeah, now I understand it. Cause it's crazy. Sometimes I get snaps of like little kids, like 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds singing my music. Like last night I couldn't believe it. I actually jumped out of bed when I actually saw it. It was a young 6-year-old white girl from New York.
Mm-hmm.
That was singing along to one of the songs on the album, like word for word. And you could tell that she knows what she's saying. She understands the song, the lyrics. So that for me was crazy, and that it's like an eye opener that some people out there actually do need the songs to relate. And that's why I still do it the way I've been always doing it. Like I make music for those that relate, not for others.
It's so surreal to hear you say that, because for a while now, I've heard your music and I was like, what you're doing, no one else has ever done, especially in South African hip hop, where you're rapping in English, you're using your lyrical, but you're crossing over. And you're appealing to a whole new generation of kids. And I think, weirdly enough, I don't know if you read that article that I did after you dropped your album, and I was like, yo, you really had an opportunity to do something special.
Yeah.
And I was a little hurt by the fact that you dropped Bad Air for free, because I felt that you could have done Platinum.
Yeah, but that goes back to what I was just saying right now.
About the reach.
Yeah, I'm not really that guy to say, yo, we're going to go golden and run, this and that. The music gets to the people that it's supposed to get, the people that really need it. Like, if someone really needs a story to relate to and they feel like your music serves that purpose or whatever, then they'll like your music and they'll bug out to it and they'll come to the shows and they'll keep supporting, they'll keep buying. But people that buy just for the sake of going along with like a trend, let's say the album was just like trending on Twitter and people were trying to get it to sell gold in like a week, then people are just like buying for the sake of the game and not for me as an artist. They're just doing it to change South African hip-hop history. And I'm not really that type of person. Like, I focus on what the music is supposed to do, the purposes that it's supposed to serve on its own, whereas I'm just like doing it only purely for industry, history books or whatever.
Well, yeah, I think my opinion has been changed a little, because I was actually speaking to Jay something yesterday, and he was like, yo, we had the biggest hit in South African history, like the most downloaded song in South African history.
Yeah.
And the money we made, like, we can't even do anything with it. So they're more concerned with making sure that the fans get their music.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
So I kind of, my perspective has slightly been shifted, but at the same point in time, like, I think it's important for us to let you know that you were really in a position to do something special.
Yeah. And I understand it and how people feel, because at the end of the day, we are trying to grow the South African hip hop culture.
Mm.
Like, we're all trying to raise it like a couple bars higher than it already is right now.
Mm.
I understand it. I'm just saying that I might not be the artist to serve for that purpose or to play that role.
You already are. That's what I'm telling you. Like, I'm not even trying to put anything on you, but I'm like, in terms of what you represent, you're the first actor I've ever come across. Like, I got people in Ghana hitting me up.
Yeah.
Like, what's up with this Nasty C kid? Like, this kid's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, he's dropping bars and it's on radio. For someone to achieve that, don't sleep on yourself, man. Like, that's something you can brag about. Like, yo, I'm the first dude that's able to do this, like, in this way.
I won't ever brag about it. Never.
And especially independent. Like, you are on radio with radio hits. Juice Bag, the remix, Hell No, blowing up before you sign.
Yeah.
So that's a major achievement within itself, man. So that's what I'm saying, like, keep doing what you're doing and be cognizant of the fact that you've literally got like a whole generation of kids. Like, all the kids your age and younger are now looking to you. Like, in 10 years time, you're going to be that dude that people look back on.
And that's the thing, that's why I want to build this relationship with them, for them to trust me with the music and not think that everything I'm doing is a stunt or I'm just looking for publicity, or if anything drastic happens, people shouldn't expect me to drop a single right after that because of the hype or the attention that I'm getting off of it. Like, a lot of people would have used an incident like the car accident. Like, I was in a car accident, I could have dropped a song because of how much attention was drawn towards me at the time. But with the relationship I'm trying to build with all my friends, I just want them to know it's not like that with me. Like, it's not about setting a trend or doing something first before another artist does it, because I'm not that type of artist. Like, I really want to clarify on that. I'm not that type of artist. I'm just purely about the music and the culture. Like, as long as the culture, at the end of the day, is able to say, you know, in South Africa, we had an artist that did A, B, C, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and was able to go this far with music, even after putting it out for free, that's good enough.
Okay. All right. So, let's talk about your introduction to hip-hop.
Yeah.
I remember you spoke about your uncle is the one that introduced you to hip-hop back when you were a kid, if I'm not mistaken.
My big brother.
Your big brother?
Yeah, my big brother.
So is he still like putting his hand over your shoulder and saying, yo, I think you should do this, you should listen to this?
No, he stopped a long time ago. I was like maybe 2 years in, and he stopped that because he was like making house music.
Okay.
And he just like found different passion, I guess, and just fell in love with something else and decided to drop music or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All this time, he's just been watching from the side, like applauding and advising here and there, you know, because of how I appeal sometimes. Because sometimes I might not know how I appeal to certain people because I'm the guy doing the stuff. So I might not have an idea of how I influence some other people. Plus, he's at home, so he knows what my pops is complaining about on TV when I'm up there. He says, yo, don't do ABC, pop said da 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 da.
Okay.
He's supportive.
Alright. So, someone as young and successful as you, who do you turn to, or who's calling you up and saying, your kids, do this with your money, or don't tweet this?
Me and my management, work hand in hand, man. We share ideas like all the time. Like, we always try to come up with something new, something crazy to do, something that'll blow people's minds at the same time serve what we want to serve.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to me being skeptical about anything, he's probably the first person I call. Mm-hmm. And ask, yo, I'm thinking about doing ABC, what you think?
Mm-hmm.
And he'll tell you.
So what's the relationship between you and Mabala? What do Mabala do that you couldn't do before you signed him?
Mabala gave me a further reach, like in terms of the market, one, two, just like spreading over Africa.
Mm-hmm.
As just me being just like a South African artist.
Mm-hmm.
They have the connections. They have the power to approach certain radio stations. Like even if I would have made it there someday, they just made it happen quicker.
Okay.
Like they raised awareness in some countries where they didn't even know what anesthesia is. So that's what they're helping.
Alright. With that being said, like, have you gotten word or been informed of your music being played in like an African country you didn't expect to be played at?
Yeah, definitely. I get some of the radio stations like tweet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I see those tweets, and also I see a lot of snaps. Like a lot of stuff happens, and it goes down like on Snapchat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because that's where people get to like interact like within 10 seconds.
Yeah.
No matter where they are from across the globe. So that's why I say the music is really, really, really going far right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like the snaps I'm getting are from people from Australia, the UK, Namibia. It's just like so many different random places that I'd never thought my music would ever just like get there.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to do good there in certain ways.
Okay. And in terms of what went into making Bad Hair, what is your mentality? What are you trying to achieve?
I was trying to create an album based on what happened within the space of a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because I started working on it last year, December. So it's not even like a space of a year yet. It's like a couple of months, like 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I started working on it last year, December. And I kind of treated it as a diary or a journal, if you'd say. Like, I try to take it as the day goes. Like, if I experience something new, if I see something new, meet somebody new, hear something new, or learn something, you know, I try to capitalize that and transcribe that and turn it into a story that someone else can relate to. Because I know I'm not the only one experiencing those type of things. There's someone out there that's also experiencing it. So I try to keep it as simple as possible and try to make music that people can relate to. Man. Just, people should never have to pick up a dictionary to understand my verses. I feel,
mm-hmm.
you know, I should always speak to a person because music is a language, right? So what I'm trying to do is get as many people as I can to understand it and speak the same language with me at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So when Bad Hair dropped, I know you mentioned before like you're a big Young Thug fan.
Yeah.
When Bad Hair went above Young Thug on the charts, how did you feel?
I was excited. I was watching it actually. I watched it all happen. Like I kept refreshing the page and reloading like every 5 seconds. I think it was Famous Dex number one, Lil Wayne was number two, Future's number three, Young Thug was number six, I think. I was like number 12.
Mm-hmm.
I debuted at number 12. And then it went up to number 8, and I was like this close to Young Thug. And then Young Thug made it up to number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then like a couple hours later, it was just like the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So that was crazy for me. But it's nothing that I ever brag about or tweet about. I'm just happy and proud of myself for doing it.
Mm. Alright. So let's talk about the Mamas.
Yeah.
You nominated Best Breakthrough Act. What does that mean to you?
It just shows me how much MTV cares about the culture and giving gratitude when it's due. And you know, rewarding artists on their hard work and recognizing talent where it should be recognized. And I can't say it came as a shock that I got that particular nomination, because I am kind of like a breakthrough artist, kind of like the newcomer artist.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, something like that. But for them to nominate me this early in the game and for it to happen this quick is crazy.
Mm.
Like I'm still in shock at the moment.
Right. You're in Lagos, like last week or the week before, right?
Yeah, for the same thing.
How was that response, man?
It was crazy. I didn't expect those type of people to know my songs. But when we went to the event, it was obviously like a private event.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if any random fan can just come in. It's people that actually, some people work there, and some people got VIP invites and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's like mature, grown people.
Mm-hmm.
And when they say that they relate to my music, it's just crazy. It just blows my mind every time. I never understand what they mean by that, because like they are older than me and I'm young. But it was such an experience, man. People who speak a totally different language from that far away from where I am right now, for them to connect with me on that level and on that basis, it's crazy.
Wow, that's dope. It's funny, man. Can you explain that chat? I know you got the grill with the purple rain.
Yeah.
So what does that signify and symbolize?
I don't really have like a deep meaning for this. It's just like always been my favorite emoji, and like purple rain. I'm starting to like purple. I don't know why. It's some of the things I probably can't say on camera. I wouldn't want to say on camera, but you know, purple is really doing good for me in my life right now. And I feel like it's like my lucky color. Every time I see purple, well, if I see like a lot of purple, only once, it kind of changes my mood and my perception and how I go about handling my hurdles during the day. Everything just kind of gets easy.
Man, dope, man. Well, keep doing what you're doing, man. Appreciate it, man.
I used to play guy boss African Hip Hop Blog handy.
It's your boy Phil from the African Hip Hop Blog out here with the king of cotton, the father of the cotton eaters,
and son of the original cotton eater.
Listen, levels, guys, levels. None other than Ricky Rick, boss. How you doing?
Yes, no, it's a pleasure.
Finally, yes. We keep seeing each other. I keep saying, yo, dude, we can do this interview. Finally, yo, gotta sit down.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years, actually.
Yeah, man.
So finally, it happens.
Ah, oh, man, it's good to see you, man. You're looking fresh, looking dapper as always.
Thank you, just chill.
Let's discuss the wardrobe, man, because you've been literally shitting on us for a good year now. Just dropping outfit after outfit. What goes into a Ricky Rick outfit, like?
To tell the truth, man, like, I don't think, like, it's just a concept. Like, everything is a concept, you know? So when you're pushing something, it's not like, like, it's just exploring different vibes, you know? That's what I try to do. I try to explore different vibes, explore different feelings. Like, where does it, what setting am I in, you know, most times. Sometimes I just throw on some stuff that I like and, you know, maybe it looks nice or whatever. But I always try to follow concepts, especially when it's, like, important things or events or whatever. Always try to follow a concept.
Okay. What we see now, that you were always known for your streetwear. Like, you used to shut that down.
Yeah.
Now you've gone into, like, that high fashion, nothing but Gucci. What was the mindset behind that shift?
Well, pretty much started with sneakers. I think the whole journey for us really started with sneakers. And just starting off, like, I grew up in Austria. So in Austria, what happened was there was a lot of emphasis on like brands like Tommy Hilfiger, on Timberlands. This was like when I was like standard 3-4. So it was like, I mean, that's like grade six for these guys here. So it was like grade six. And there was so much emphasis on like Tommy Hilfiger, Lacoste. These are like brands like that were big in Europe, you know? And I always aspired to sort of be like one of those kids who could afford that, but we obviously couldn't afford that, we were from South Africa. But one thing that my dad always made sure was that like a dope pair of sneakers. So my love for sneakers was something that always continued. My love for Jordans and just dope basketball shoes was always there. And then now, when we came sort of into rap, I think, or whatever, I'm getting opportunities to start exploring like different parts of the world and exploring like materials. That's why like I use cotton like as something that's important to me. Exploring different materials and like what it means just to be comfortable in the skin beyond just sneakers, because like black people, our like illest representation is like of shoes. Like we look down the whole time, like, yo, what shoes is this, what shoes is that, you know? That's what you do as like black people, you know? And emphasis is on like, you know, your shoe represents you. And then like when I started traveling everywhere, shoes really don't mean that much. It's all about like accessories and all that other stuff. And then I got into that, so I think that's where it came from.
Alright, speaking of shoes, man, you got the Pharrell joints on. Have they even dropped in South Africa yet?
Yeah, they dropped, yeah. Got a couple. Shout out to the Connect. Shout out to my Connects at Shelf Life.
Okay.
Always doing the most. Yeah. Got a couple.
Funny enough, the other day I was in a waiting room.
Yeah.
Pick up an L magazine.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, there's King Koti. So what does that mean, like, for a hip hop act?
Yeah.
To now get recognition in what we can term the mainstream white media for your fashion sense.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean to you?
Well, it's dope, you know, on one hand, it's like it's really cool because we're not expected to be those guys in those magazines, and like a lot of people don't think they fit into that world. Like the fashion world really is run by like white establishment, you know, that's what it's really about. And a lot of kids don't feel like they fit into that world. A lot of like streetwear kids, and even streetwear kids that are into high fashion and into designing, don't feel like they fit into that world. So for Elle to sort of open themselves up to us, it opens up you know, doors for other kids to feel like they should aim for that, instead of just like trying to be like indie designers that don't care about those publications, because those publications do care about them and they need them to keep running, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Everything evolves. So to have a rapper have a few pages in Elle, it's pretty dope. But it's even beyond just rap, it's just like being like a black kid rocking his own style or whatever. That's pretty dope.
Okay. That being said, you've got your own line of clothing, right?
Yeah.
When are you planning on like a major seasonal release or a new line?
Next year, I think we got some dope stuff coming. My plan is to really showcase like a full collection, my first collection at Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week next year. But the difficulty is like I don't want to make like I've made T-shirts and a few things like that, and like I don't really want to make just T-shirts from the point that like I think I need to like put all my chips in. If we're gonna do it, like I'm gonna do it like music. Like when I started music, I learned how to produce. I learned how to, you know, print the CDs. You know, everyone knows how to print. I produce. You learn how to rap. I didn't always rap, so I had to learn how to rap on top of my beats, and then learn how to make the CDs and learn how to get them out. You know, and I feel like with T-shirts and clothes and stuff, you really need to immerse yourself in fully. You know, there's no point of like saying you're doing it because you're a rapper. Like I'm not into like selling merch. I don't want to sell like merch, you know what I mean? I want to learn like a new industry. Same thing with like for any kid, like when they want to do something, they must actually try to learn the industry and learn like the ins and outs of actually like creating a whole lookbook. It's not just about t-shirts, it's about like trying to create a whole lookbook, like what's your vibe, where's your mind state, you know? And I think my main aim is for, yeah, I think eight months from now that'll be ready.
Let's get back to the music, man. I did an interview with The Less a few months back, and he let it slip that back in the day you were the freestyle beast. That you used to go into the city, the CBD, with no cash and come back with like $5,000. How true are those claims?
Hey, I don't know about $5,000, but I think my love for rapping started with freestyling. Like it was just like I love freestyling. Even till today, most of the verses that I record, actually they're all freestyles. Like they're all really freestyles, you know? I've never like, I don't want to say I don't write, because you know people put it like, I don't write, as if they just sit there and like a 16 comes to their head going. But like, I don't really like write down the full script anymore, you know? Like I realized that my comfortable zone was just in freestyling, making sounds, just coming up with words. And luckily, I only rap about just being cool most times. So there's not too much thought process that has gone to it. But freestyling is like what I really like to do.
I mean, so that being said, it definitely feels like when you took your break,
yeah,
and then when you came back,
yeah,
with like joints like Nafukwa, and since then, every song you've dropped has been an anthem. Is that deliberate when you go into the studio, like, yo, this hook needs to be easily repeatable? Because every joint you drop, it seems like it's made for performance, it's made for radio.
Well, this is sort of, I think that's like the up and down of music for me. It's like the good, it's the best part and the worst part. The worst part is that, most of the songs that we have to create like that. The worst part is like most songs right now, what's going on with hip hop and just South African music in general, I would say music everywhere really, there's like, it can be a bit of like formulaic, you know? And to tell you the truth, there's few people who can crack the code of the formula, right? And once you have the formula, you can continue using that formula until people just stop liking you as a person and have no interest. You can still create good songs with that formula and whatever, but you know, then it just depends if people like you or not. The other side is that I don't find that like as the most fun part of making music. The fun part of making music for me was like exploring different sounds and making music that people had to maybe have to have like a certain taste level to really listen to and palate. And you have to have you have to sort of be in touch with your history as a person and like your emotions and your feel, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of our people are just not there yet, you know. And a lot of the kids are just not there yet. And the older crowd who has been through it doesn't listen to hip hop. So I find myself in a sort of situation where when I have to release a song, I sort of have the code to releasing a nice, quiet tempo song. Mm-hmm. I have the code to releasing a trap tempo song. It's just codes at the end of the day. It's not like, it's really not like, anything monumental, you know. Like a lot of people credit for making nice songs, but it's like it's really nothing incredible, you know. It's just about figuring out what's the formula that works for you. Mm-hmm. So basically the answer is yes. We're able to make everything happen because it's crunch time. It needs to be a big song, and you can make a big song. Anyone can make a big song. It just depends if people like you or not. And the other side is that I would rather make music that's a challenge to make and a challenge to put out. Unfortunately, out of what I perform like 35 minutes to 45 minutes when I need to. And to tell the truth, all people want to hear is hits, so you have to like present them with hits. But the day that we could actually like perform album songs that's on the album, that'll be a great day, I think, for hip hop.
Cool. Are you planning on doing that?
Like I say, you've got to balance. So people want to hear, if you're booked at an event and it's like a festival and there's so many thousands of people, they just want to hear the hits.
No, but
the question is, am I going to step out of that space? And that's going to have to be a risk we're going to have to see if we take or not. But I would definitely like to do stuff that's more musical, but we have to get to a page where you're financially secure to not, you know, to do that, because not everyone understands.
Right. That being said, like, by all intents and purposes, you're now an A-list hip hop act. I mean, you are up there, you've got a number of hits, you've got a number of features. Every video you drop has been incredible. Do you feel that your real fan base is not big enough, where if you went completely left and you went back to just abandoning that formula and doing the music you want to make, do you think they'd follow it?
Well, that's the thing. Do I see myself doing this for 10 years? No. Do I see myself developing into something else and someone else that does things in different fields? Yes. So if I take a left turn completely, it's not going to be because music is the first thing on my plate, you know. I'm going to have other things involved, and music will just be like, I'll get back to the real reason why we did music, which was for fun. And once you do music for fun, you can do anything and it doesn't matter what people think about it.
That being said, you're not getting recognition. Best hip hop and the Mamas. What does that mean to you?
I think it's cool. I mean, it's always nice to be part of award shows. So it's nice to be, you know, to get like mentioned in an award show. So I think it's cool. It's just, it shows that we still have some room to grow. And it shows that, you know, maybe you've done something over the past couple of years.
Okay. Also, in the same line with the Mamas, last year.
Yeah.
Nafuka.
Yes.
Best video.
Yes.
Personally, I was happy as hell for you, man. Yeah. That was a massive move.
Yeah.
After everything that video had been through, like been taking off YouTube and then putting it back on, over controversy, what did winning that award mean to you?
It meant a lot to me. Like, if you find the clips, you should probably ask someone here on MTV to find the clips of after. Yeah, it meant a lot, man. But, like I say, man, to tell the truth, like, I feel like there shouldn't be any award show where we don't win best music video. To tell the truth, I feel like they played us they play us at most of these award shows. But then again, it's all about taste, you know? But for me, out of what people are really putting out and what people are trying, like we have so many feels, like we did a short film and it's like nobody is looking at like the short film for the music video, which is cool because nobody has the attention span to watch something for 12 minutes anymore. But it's like, I don't feel like there should be any time where there's an award show and we're not at least having a mention in the music videos. But that, I think that's just part of the system, you know? So when that happened with MTV, it was something we didn't expect at all because nobody has recognized us for videos. And the same way that nobody will recognize me for the verses or for any verses I drop, nobody will. They'll try not to recognize as much as possible. They'll never recognize you for any thing that you do. So when you do get recognized, it means a lot. You can't lie and say it doesn't mean a lot.
Alright. That being said, when you dropped that short film, was it getting love like from TV out here?
I think, you know, the news channels were picking it up and our main goal was really to take it around festivals. So it wasn't really for, we knew that nobody's going to play a 12-minute music video. But it, you know, it did great for my website. The hits were crazy on my website. It did great for in sort of the industry. We won a lawyer for that, which was amazing. And like again, I say, I didn't expect anyone to give us anything. So when we won the lorry, it just gave you that thing like maybe you are in the right direction. Keep trying to produce the best you can. Sometimes you're gonna miss, sometimes you're gonna hit, but you know, just keep doing it, keep pulling out the concepts, just trying to do cool with concepts instead of just trying to like pander to what people like.
But you spoke earlier about like the formula, like the formula for music. On the flip side, it seems like there's a formula for videos, like a lazy formula, where dudes, every music video has the same format. It's girl, chase the girl, nice car, drink a placement of some brand, you know what I mean? But your videos are completely different and you've spoken about how much you spend on your music videos. Why do you decide to do that as opposed to following the trend?
Well, I've never taken any money for any of my music videos. So I always have 100% control in what I have to do, you know? Because like, when people get money from brands want them to sort of show some sort of lifestyle of the brand. So a lot of people are out of control. But for me, it's like, I feel like I'm out of control with some of the music we put out. Like, there's certain music you have to just put out for the people to rock to. So the only place where you can sort of keep like full control is on the music video. Some people want to love it, some people want to hate it, some people are not going to get it, but it's really the only place where you have control, and you might as well put your money in that and anything else, because you know that's like going to live there forever, and like people will look back at you on like your visuals, you know, they can tell your story through your visuals. And I think like from my first video, the development of Ricky Rick has shown throughout all the videos, and that's like the main goal, is like the only story I'm gonna have after all this is done.
I think we've covered a lot here, but I think the last thing I know is Boys in Bucks.
Yeah.
Like there was a time you guys really looked in a position to take over this game.
Yeah.
What's the situation at right now with Boys in Bucks?
Well, Boys in Bucks like is always a group of friends. So at the end of the day, I think everyone is like doing their own thing. It was never like a record label. If it was a record label or something, I think, you know, we would have put ourselves in a, you know, an amazing position. But we didn't tie our businesses up. So nobody has any business, any real business connection to each other in Boys in Bucks. So that's the one thing. So at the end of the day, it's like, it was just like us coming out, chilling together, being cool, and rocking out like guys with similar minds. But I feel like at the end of the day, like you have to understand that I'm 30, the other guys are over 30, way over 30. You know, it's not like we're kids anymore, you know? And you'll find that with, if not 100% of all hip-hop crews in South Africa, or even record labels, the older people get, the less they can really work together because they know who they are and what they're there to do. And I think with Boys in Bucks, we've all accepted who we are and what we're there to do. So there's no we're not trying to force us being together the whole time anymore, you know. It's like everyone's grown now, doing their own thing, taking care of their kids. So everyone, you know, it's good from that sense. For the fans, it's fucked up that they didn't get to learn more, because I feel like we could teach people more all together. There's more we could teach people when all together. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, there's other kids that are coming and they'll maybe learn from that mistake or learn from the achievement, you know. So I felt like we're the last kids who wanna come out that are like that. There's gonna be more kids and they're all there. I already see them, you know, and just hope they start younger than us, because we started really making music on a high level together at like guys were like 27, 30 plus, you know. So just hope that the kids do it at a young age.
Well, we are here for MTV, so why don't you let the fans know how they can vote for you guys live out?
Yo, this is your boy Ricky Rick, King Kotini, the content eater himself. Make sure you go out there and you vote. MTV Awards are coming. The time is running out. Make sure you go out there and vote if you want to. Best Hip Hop category. Let's make it happen.
Yes, and there we go with the Mama content. We're going to be bringing you guys more Mama content throughout the weekend. So make sure you tune into the African HHB. Keep it locked on the website. Keep it locked on our social media. We're going to have these updates flowing. As I like to say, Mama Weekend is like All-Star Weekend for Africa. And celebs are going to be out in full force. So that being said, guys, please don't forget to follow us on Twitter at AfricanHHB. Like us on Facebook. Or follow our Viber public chat, viber.com/AfricanHHB. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter as well, at PhilChard. Give us feedback. Let me know what you guys think, what we can improve, who you want to hear from. And I really do appreciate you guys taking the time out to listen to the show. So without further ado, we'll end the episode and we'll see you guys next week.